up, everybody? Welcome back to For the Numbers, presented by FTNFantasy.com. Adam Pfeiffer here on, I guess, Wednesday night. We're recording this probably up Thursday in the AM, talking about some early 2024 sleepers. And I say early, and I think about it, and I look at the calendar, and it's already middle of June. So how early is it really? I mean, we got preseason and training camp. It'll be here before we know it. And to talk about some early sleepers for the 2024 redraft season, this is the best part about doing the podcast. I can just bring on so many amazing colleagues because everybody I work with is awesome. So today, it's Jeremy Poplars, who hosts the FTN Dynasty podcast, does a ton of amazing work on the site, especially Dynasty-related. I mean, it feels like it's probably different for you now, Jeremy, because you're so used to, during the earlier months in the spring, doing all the, you know, player analysis of the rookies and everything. And now you can kind of sit back and kind of talk about teams. I know you're doing a team preview series, but appreciate the time. What's going on? And I'm sorry that we are not doing Dynasty discussion today.
Oh, it's always good. You know, you can always change gears. I'm like a Ford Taurus. That's what I am. You know, I can do it all, right? You know, just kind of ride through it all and kind of talk about anything. I feel like with Dynasty, that's my approach even too. You know, when you head into each season is kind of a mini redraft. Obviously, there's some values. You kind of value players slightly different, but when you're playing the season, it's still redraft. You're still out there to win. So I'm excited. Like you said, it's a little bit of a slowdown process when you're talking about Dynasty at this point. You know, you still got some rookie drafts lingering out there. Some trades, stuff like that's kind of ramping up a little bit, but you know, it's a nice little bit of break. Like you said, we're working through the team preview series on the Dynasty podcast, kind of getting an overview of some of these teams and kind of breaking down what we think and other analysts I'm bringing on from around the industry think on what these players could be doing here in the near future as well as the further future. So really excited times, and I'm glad to be on here to talk a little redraft sleepers.
Yeah, before we get into it all, I do want to plug a few things at FTN Fantasy. Obviously, just in terms of content, we have so much going on, rankings. A bunch of us are doing the second year scouting report series where we highlight a rookie from last season, how they did, what went right, what went wrong, what should we expect in 2024. So those have been fun. I'm doing the Fantasy Crossroads series again for, I think it's like the fourth year straight now, where I'm debating players that are being drafted close to each other in drafts right now. And then we also have some good opportunities to take advantage of all of that content. We're running the early bird special right now at FTN Fantasy. It ends July 6th, so you can save a bunch on a ton of different plans, whether it's the Fantasy Plus, whether it's the Bets Plus, whether it's, you know, whatever you are looking for. We are running that promo, the early bird special, until July 6th. So you have a little bit less than a month to take advantage of that. And finally, be on the lookout around this time next month, because we are overhauling our stats hub, and I don't know if you've looked at some of the stuff behind the scenes, Jeremy, but I have been pretty much in love with what it's been so far, and that'll launch hopefully later on, you know, maybe a month or so. I'm not exactly sure, but that is on the horizon, so much to look forward to. But yeah, that stats hub, I'm probably most excited about that. It's what the stats hub has been, and then times 50,000.
Yeah, I'd agree. I've been necessarily not missing it. I would say missing it. I was going to try to find a better word there, but missing it is definitely true. I really love our stats hub. I think a ton of great information as far as trying to analyze what these players can be even in the future, as well as what they were last year, to kind of predict the immediate future for redraft and kind of just break down, you know, was it the player? Was it some coaching? And there's a ton of extra added stats that they're adding this year that just make it that much easier. Yeah. So I've messed with it a little bit. I think you've probably been in there a little bit more than I have. I just, you know, getting a lot of stuff done here around the house and everything before football season comes. So I haven't had a ton of time to dive into it, but once it's live, you know, I'm definitely going to be getting into it a little bit more.
Yeah, I love it. So be on the lookout for that. Take advantage of the early bird special. Again, that ends July 6th. So let's get to it, Jeremy. Usually I'd say start quarterback and then go to the other positions, but it doesn't matter. Whoever you want to talk about first, again, and like identifying a sleeper, is it somebody that goes on the last round? Is it somebody that you have to necessarily have not heard of? I don't think so. I think it's strictly somebody that's definitely not going the first three, four rounds, But also, I also think it could just be somebody that kind of vastly outperforms their average draft position, which right now can kind of be tough to find incredibly accurate and not even accurate, just like, you know, notable ADP, because the most of the drafts we're seeing right now are best ball. But who stood out to you first? When I mentioned that we're talking sleepers, who's the first person that kind of caught your eye?
So I will go quarterbacks for you. I'll roll through here. I don't know if you have planned to hit every position, but I'll give a couple at each. There's two that I mentioned. Like you said, it's really early to try and dissect a true ADP. But at the moment, you know, I was used Fantasy Pros to kind of give me an idea. They use it from three different sources, according to their website at the moment. It has a 2024 ADP. So right now, two guys that I have really keyed in on, and I'm actually going to be writing an article that comes out tomorrow on like some kind of sleeper late round quarterbacks, is Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield. Starting with Watson, I feel like there's a lot of down love here on Watson. Two seasons that he hasn't been able to be healthy the entirety of it. But the last time he was a healthy season, which is now 2020, he did pass for 4,800 passing yards. We have seen him produce multiple 4,000 yard passing seasons. And we've seen him battle some injuries. We've seen him battle everything on the off the field stuff, carrying into the on field stuff. But the Browns are really setting him up in a situation that offers a lot of upside here in 2024. They added Jerry Jeudy, immediately signed him to a longer term deal. So there's some belief there that Jerry Jeudy probably is going to be the second receiver in that offense, and another guy that's battled some injuries, but has proven to be a viable asset, especially on the NFL side of it when called upon for the Broncos. So I think the addition of Jeudy, you have Amari Cooper, hopefully shows up. I know there's some controversy there as well with this contract, but add in Elijah Moore. You have three good targets there. You have David Njoku, who definitely exploded onto the season last year, and hopefully a healthy Deshaun Watson. Now, is he going to maybe give us, you know, 4,800 passing yards, 30 plus touchdowns? Probably not. But being drafted at quarterback 21 currently in ADP just seems like screaming value to me. Especially with Superflex leagues being more popular, even in the redraft format, it feels like. I think he's a guy that you could really wait a little bit, punt the quarterback position, even in a one quarterback league. Like, he's good security if you wanted to take a shot on maybe Caleb Williams or one of these rookies that got drafted a little bit higher and could potentially fizzle out, or maybe get an Anthony Richardson early. Like, the security of Deshaun Watson just feels really good, because I think there's a ton of upside still built into Watson as we head here into 2024. So I really like Deshaun Watson at the quarterback position, at least as a sleeper.
Yeah, like, he can't, at least I don't think so, but he can't be as bad passing the football as he was last year. Like, everything just looked really awkward and uncomfortable for him when he was throwing the football. Amari is still playing at a high level. I think it's pretty clear at this point Jerry Jeudy's probably a bust, but I don't think he's, like, a bad player. Like, if, like, you could do a lot more. Like, Amari Cooper, Jeudy, and Njoku, like, that's a very solid, you know, Elijah Moore still there. It's a very solid group of pass catchers. Mm-hmm. And, like, we know this team in the past has been run the football 30 times Chubb when the defense is playing well and win off defense and win these games 17-10. Like, the defense is still good, but the backfield's a question mark with Chubb. Probably not 100%. Mm-hmm. We'll see what they do with the rest of the backs they added. But to me, like, it's going to come down to Watson, and it's the one thing he has consistently done since joining Cleveland has been rushing. Like, last year he averaged about 24 rushing yards per game. The year before that, again, he's only played, I think, what, 12 games in two seasons with Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the suspensions and the injuries played a part, but he's averaging around 25 rushing yards per game. So that's 2.5 points right there. And I think he's probably going to be in that, you know, 20 to 25 yard per game range again. So, again, a quarterback's always tough to make cases for sleepers, because the position is just so deep that, like, it's going to be almost impossible for some of these sleeper quarterbacks we may talk about to crack the top 10, let alone the top 7, top 8. But yeah, I do think there's a chance that, you know, Alex Van Pelt gone, we know Stefanski's been pretty much calling all the plays anyway, but if this defense takes even a little bit of a step back, like, this could be more of a pass heavy team than we thought. And then you mentioned Baker too. Like, I'm he could be a massive sleeper, even after having the year he just had, because I think everybody's out on him now after just seeing it for 1 year. The quarterback position deep, and Dave Canales is gone. But I also just like I liked what I saw from him. I think Godwin's a lot better in this next season too, with him playing the slot more. For me, like again, it's more of like a super flex two quarterback situation. But I still think Bryce 100%. Young. I still think Bryce Young's probably my sleeper. I just think there's no way he again. Is he as good as CJ Stroud? I think we can put that to bed. He's not. But is he suddenly a massive bust? I don't know. If he doesn't get it done this year, he is, right? They add Canales. Mm-hmm. They add a ton of playmakers with Deontay Johnson. They add Jonathan Brooks. They add Leggett. Like, they add a ton. They upgrade the offensive line. And to me, like, Bryce Young showed some signs last season, but I point this out a lot with Bryce Young, like, and everybody kind of points it out too. There's just, there was no separation for these guys. According to FTN data, Bryce Young averaged 1.62 yards of separation per pass attempt to wide receivers and tight ends. That was the fourth lowest rate in football. He averaged 2.7 yards after the catch per reception. That was outside the top five qualified quarterbacks. So like there was just not a lot of help. And we saw what Dave Canales just did for Baker. We saw what he did for Geno Smith 2 years ago. Again, I think his ceiling is like quarterback 15 probably. But overall, as somebody that you can get really late as a second quarterback, like we're in a dynasty league, right? And I just kind of, I don't want to say punted the quarterback position because it's a super flex league, but I went with those two quarterbacks, actually, my two quarterbacks, Bryce and Mayfield. So I'm really high on him, not getting what Stroud did last year and not being, you know, an elite fantasy quarterback, but just bouncing back and showing that he's not, again, we see this more than you think with the number one overall pick at quarterback, right? Peyton Manning wasn't great. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence wasn't great. These things happen. Again, he's definitely not Peyton Manning. If he becomes what Trevor Lawrence is right now, I think that's a win. So I think that's possible for him to get to that range of quarterback. But yeah, I just like what Carolina's done. I'm a huge believer in Dave Canales. And finally, he just has players that can get open.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all in on that as well. Again, another sneak peek. That's also in my article as well. A little bit more on the dynasty side for me with Bryce Young. I don't think he gets very huge enough of an increase, we'll say, in 2024 to be relevant for us. Like you said, maybe in Superflex, yes, because he managed still a QB23 finish last year despite all of the struggles and the adversity and the quarterback changes, the lack of the separation, like you said, the abysmal offensive line play. Like, everything was against Bryce Young as a rookie, adding a couple injury missed weeks there. So I think that he can only get better, let's put it that way. And I do think that there will be some improvement this year. I just still am not ready to mail that ship home and redraft as far as a guy that I still could trust going forward this year. Do you know what I mean? I still think I want to see.
Yeah, like he's not going to get drafted in 12 team redraft leagues. Like that's not happening.
100%. Yeah, especially in one quarterback. No, not happening. But Superflex, I think maybe he does. If it's 12-team redraft Superflex League or two quarterback league, 100% he's getting drafted. And there's definitely worse options out there. I just don't know if I wouldn't overreach for him. Let's put it that way. Like, I would take him at his ADP probably, but I don't know if he exceeds it a ton. You know, I like, as opposed to where I think like what Watson could offer or say even Mayfield, like you said, like I think both of those offer a higher ceiling just because I think they're set up a little bit better than what Mayfield is, because there's still a lot of question marks with Young as far as the receiver group. Like, yes, they added Deontay Johnson, but Adam Thielen's now another year older. Like, Xavier Leggett has plenty of question marks in his prospect profile. We saw Mingo kind of fail last year. Like, they don't really use the tight end position. And then you have Jonathan Brooks coming off of an injury, and then Chuba Hubbard, who looked solid. But again, they're still not as solid, I say, as the foundations around the other two players. So that's why I still am a little bit off of Young in 24, at least.
Yeah. Any other quarterbacks you want to talk about, or should we move on to the next position?
I feel like you're pretty good at that. Like, you mentioned it. I mean, it's hard to really base that ADP, you know, and you look at some of these and the information we can get now, but like the other guys around them, I mean, that's where you're really kind of looking sleeper, and I'm not really in on many of them, I'll say.
Yeah, and like even like Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams aren't sleepers. Jaden Daniels, I think by the end of July, is going to be like a top 10 quarterback. I think an ADP. I think he's going to be that high.
Oh, yeah. I think Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels are going to be super. I mean, they're already at like borderline QB1s. So
right.
It's hard to say they're going to be sleepers. I guess you could put in maybe, you know, some of the veterans that are going to fall behind them. You know, Justin Herbert is at QB14 right now. It seems a little low.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Let's move on then to the backfields. There are a lot of players that I like. Like, I really like, I like either going with, you know, the hero RB approach in drafts where I just get one of the elite, mm-hmm. you know, top seven, top eight players and then just load up a wide receiver or even wait and draft a bunch of running backs in that like 28 to 45 range. And there are a lot of players in that range I like. Jaleel McLaughlin's been pretty hyped, actually. There was a report today about him being like the best player in camp at that position for Denver. I'm very high on him. I'm very high on the scheme. I do worry about the size. Like, could that just come back to, am I just overlooking the fact that he's, you know, the size that he is? But I look at it, and so I just did the second year scouting report on him. You can read it at the site. It's free to read. But like, there's so many good things going for him, right? Obviously, last year, he only averaged about 6.5 touches per game. Only game he had more than 10 touches was the game where Javonte Williams didn't play. He had 12 in that game. But, like, the advanced metrics, again, you always have to be careful with these advanced metrics for players with smaller sample size. But he was good. I mean, he was top 6 in yards per out run among running backs. He was 10th in yards per touch, 13th in breakaway run rate. Okay, he looked good. That's fine if you want to talk about it, but, again, small sample size. For me, what's exciting is that if he gets Samaje Perine's role, and I think Samaje Perine is one of those potential cut candidates, they brought in Estime, they would save money on the cap if they moved on from him. It just makes sense too, given the way this team's going. That role was really fantasy friendly last year because he played a ton on third down and pretty much all the 2-minute drills on a team that was trailing and chasing points more often than not. 93% of the team snaps in a 2-minute drill, 67% on long down and distances last year. He had 11 receptions during the 2-minute drill. Only Bijan and Breece Hall had more. And his 14 third down receptions were 9th among running backs. So because of that usage and because of all that pass catching production, Samaje Perine, again, smaller sample, but he was top 6 in fantasy points per touch. So if Jaleel McLaughlin, who's more explosive, better after the catch, etc., more efficient, gets that role at the very least, he's going to be on the radar in PPR formats. Then if he gets, you know, a handful of carries per game on top of that, you know, we're talking, like, again, it's Sean Payton. What if he's in that kind of Darren Sproles role? And we know that offense is going to be conducive to fantasy points for running backs because this offense is always hyper-targeted running backs. Last year, both Javonte Williams and Samaje Perine were top 15 among running backs in target share. Last year, Russell Wilson, 23.3% of his pass attempts went behind the line of scrimmage. That was the fourth highest rate in the NFL. Again, who did they just draft a quarterback too? Like, if Bo starts, we know what he did in that offense at Oregon. It was very similar. There's a lot of passes behind the line of scrimmage. 27% of his passes were behind the line of scrimmage. It's a lot of screens from him and Sean Payton's offense. And we already saw Sean Payton last year. He liked to utilize McLaughlin in the screen game because he was actually 6th in the NFL among running backs in receptions and 9th in targets off screens as a rookie. So entering that second season, again, is he going to get 18 to 20 touches per game? No, he probably doesn't get 15 barring Javonte Williams missing time. But if he can live in like the 8 to 12 range with a lot of that being pass catching production, and if this team is, you know, 5-6 win team with him being the third down and 2-minute drill player, I love the upside in PPR formats for, again, not a top 20 running back, but somebody that could easily be a top 35 option with that pass catching production. But again, I'm also worried that the ADP is starting to climb.
Yeah, I mean, I think that depending on where that ADP ends up falling out, I could get behind Jaleel McLaughlin a little bit.
Yeah, I'll admit, like, as much as I do like him and his offense, he's not somebody you want to be like over ADP on.
Yeah, I still just believe in Javonte Williams a little bit. I'm probably in a minority at this point of that, but I still think that Javonte Williams can do everything that Jaleel McLaughlin can do. So I guess it depends on the coaching staff and how it all does get deployed. But I do think that maybe Javonte Williams, now another year removed from that ACL injury, kind of bounces back a little bit and shows a little bit of what he was at North Carolina. If that's the case, I think he's significantly better than McLaughlin. So I just still am not on that train yet. I guess as heavy, I guess, by the sounds of it, as you are. So I think there's an opportunity to be had here. I think it's a wide open running back room. I think the addition of Audric Estime makes things interesting. Like you mentioned, Samaje Perine still in there. So depending on who ends up kind of working their way to the top of this group, I like them enough. Like you said, I don't think they ever become, I think it's just going to be so muddy that no one becomes like a legit top 15 asset by any means in any fantasy format, but you're going to get yourself a guy, like you said, that can be like a, you know, top low end running back two, maybe high end three, which is a good flex player depending on your league. So I get behind it. Like you said, it's going to really depend on that ADP and how high that does rise once we get closer to August when more of the drafts happen.
Who are you looking at?
The running back position, I feel like, much like the quarterback position, not many sleepers. It's hard to find sleepers nowadays. So much information out there.
I like the position, honestly, for late sleepers.
I agree. I think that there's a lot of, like, I guess sleepers, yeah. I think there's a lot of the way the position has transitioned into, like, this collaborative of, like, multiple back sets for a lot of these teams. Which may help create more value. Yeah. Deeper, but one that I'm actually kind of looking at, and you're gonna love this one because I'm gonna hit you with it.
Ray Davis.
It's the Giants backfield.
Oh, right? Yes.
No don't respect. Know really who it's going to be? But I really think it's going to be Devin Singletary.
Why wouldn't it be? I know the Tyrone Tracy hype is there.
Podcast from the past. We have talked Devin Singletary up and down on multiple episodes in there. And I really think that he's proven now, even with the Texans in multiple games where he was actually given an opportunity. Let's see here. Week 10, he was given, you know, a ton of rushing attempts, 22 fantasy points, 17 in week 11 when he's given 22 rushing attempts, 12 against the Jets, which is a decent run defense last year. 17 against the Titans in another game where he put up 120 rushing yards. He continuously turns out yards. Is he fancy? Is he flashy? No. But he kind of does everything really well. And I think that the state of the Giants, they're going to have to lean a little bit on this run game somewhatly, and try to kind of get some of the pressure off of Daniel Jones and allow this passing game to flourish. We'll be getting the running game going. And they weren't really able to do a ton of that last year. So obviously dropping off from Saquon to Devin Singletary or Eric Gray is obviously a concern, but I think it's going to be Singletary going forward. Right now, he is getting drafted fairly late. And has nothing but upside in there. You know what I mean? Like you said, you wait on a running back. Out of that grouping, like Devin Singletary could be the lead guy and be getting 20 touches a game and topping 100 yards multiple times a season. And he's going to be giving you these multiple double digit fantasy point weeks and half and full PPR leagues. So I'm in on it. I think Devin Singletary is a really good value right now because I think so many people are like, oh, well, Saquon didn't do it last year. And this Giants defense, our offense is blah. And like Devin Singletary's never been a thing. So I think there's a huge value to be had here with Devin Singletary.
Yeah, right now over at Underdog, being drafted as running back 32, and I think that could be closer to like 34, 35 within a few weeks. Like I think I think Brian Robinson could pass him, maybe Eckler. I know it's not full PPR over there. Look, he's back with Brian Daboll. Last time he was with Daboll, it was 2021. He had about 230 touches that season in an offense that was obviously better, but also had more talent around. And you mentioned it, like he took over that Houston backfield last year in week 9. From that point on, Singletary played about 70% of the snaps, handled 70% of the rushing attempts, averaged 19 touches per game. He was a running back 13 in fantasy. So like, I'm not saying he's going to be a top 13 running back or even top 20, but if we're looking, you know, start of July and he's going as like the 35th, 36th running back. Yeah, I'm all over that. I understand this hype about Tyrone Tracy, but like, yes, there's a path for him, but he's also very relatively new at the position. So I don't know. I think Singletary is always underrated.
The hype with Tracy just seems too, I'm leaning on the physical traits. Like I never was on Tracy.
I think it also coincides with that a lot of people that don't really follow Singletary as closely as we do just don't understand that he's a good player. Like he's not great. He's not flashy, like you mentioned, but he doesn't make mistakes very often. I know he had one fumbling spell a couple years ago in Buffalo, but the one way that can hurt Singletary is Tracy has probably more, flashy ability and tools in the passing game. Singletary's always been like, at worst, kind of a neutral player in that regard. But, but Singletary's vision's always been great. He's great in terms of you look at the elusive numbers for him since he's been in the NFL. He's been right up there. Like he's that good. So, you said I would love it, and I definitely did. What do you think about Kendre Miller in New Orleans? Because there's talks about him getting more of the, at least the rushing equity in this offense. We know Kamara's going to have probably as many targets and receptions as anybody at that position, but wasn't healthy in his rookie season, still incredibly young. We have this zone offense now with Clint Kubiak coming in. That's going to be a carbon copy of San Francisco's wide zone. That's a really good fit for a player like Kendre Miller. And while Kamara's still there, he's 29, and his rushing efficiency metrics have taken – they've fallen off a cliff over the past 2 years.
So, with Miller, I think it's a decent fit, like you'd mentioned. Division issues are kind of always been an issue with Kendre Miller, which gets a little bit taken away in that wide scheme, but it's a little bit more also critical. So. I don't hate Kendre Miller. I was never super high on him to begin with. I think the opportunity will be there, and it's going to kind of be a make it or break it year for him. The Saints chose not to add somebody, so there's belief still obviously from the franchise themselves in what Kendre Miller can offer. But I don't know if there is going to be enough meat on the bones for him in this offense. It's likely going to not be much better than it was last year to make a fantasy viable role, because he's still splitting with Kamara. And what makes Kamara so good, obviously, over the years has kind of been volume, at least in the last few seasons, is that volume is allowing him to really kind of give us a ton of fantasy points and nobody else behind him. So I don't know if Kamara is going to give up enough to Kendre Miller to make Miller also a viable option, if you get where I'm coming from, because he's not going to get the passing work. So in those split backfields, you really kind of want the guy with the passing work, because it feels a little bit safer of a floor, because you're going to at least get those PPR points in there as opposed to just purely rushing yards. And then the guy that's running the football is going to need to score more touchdowns, which I don't predict the Saints to score a ton of touchdowns overall. So I'm not as high on Kendre Miller. I think, again, it all falls down to where that ADP does fall in. I know he's going pretty late, so there's definitely worse options around him. So I will probably take a couple jumps at him, but he's not a guy that I'm like, oh, I have to leave my draft with.
Yeah, totally fair. I also have Ty Chandler written down just because he impressed last season. And look, I love Aaron Jones. I still think Aaron Jones is probably the most underrated running back in the NFL, but he's pushing 30. He dealt with multiple hamstring issues last season, which he, struggled with. He missed time. Still really efficient, especially down the stretch. So I think if Aaron Jones can stay healthy, he's going to be good. But again, he's pushing 30. And it's not like Aaron Jones has ever been this like 20 plus touch per game player to start with. So like there is opportunity for Ty Chandler to get some work regardless. And then if Jones misses time with injuries, all of a sudden you have Ty Chandler getting all of the work in what I think is a good offense. Obviously won't be as good without Kirk Cousins there. But we saw Chandler, from week 10 on last year, he became the lead running back, took over for Madison, averaged about 14 touches, about 11 PPR points per game. So he kind of stood out to me. And then last player was Antonio Gibson. Feels like Antonio Gibson is always a player that's tough for the fantasy community to quit, but he's actually younger than Ramondre Stevenson. I think he's a better fit for this scheme that Alex Van Pelt wants to bring to the Patriots. Ramondre does not have a lot of experience running outside zone or any sort of zone. And still, Gibson, I think, is really versatile in the passing game. So just two running backs that are going super late that I've had interest in, Antonio Gibson and Ty Chandler.
I like Chandler. I like that call. Like you mentioned, I love Aaron Jones. Still will be drafting him in spots for sure. But like you said, the injuries have started to pile up. He's not getting any younger. So Chandler will get his time to shine at some point this year. So if it comes earlier than later, there's a chance that he earns himself a role consistently throughout the season. So I do like that for sure. Gibson, you're making me do it all over again, aren't you? I was in on him a little bit last year. Again, we talked about him, and I feel like I want to talk about him, but I feel like you said, it seems like this is a yearly thing with Antonio Gibson. I don't think it becomes much of anything. I think there'll be some weeks, like we said, similar to Chandler. I think you'll see some weeks from him, but I don't think he really becomes much of anything that's going to be a like weekly starter for us at any point.
Yeah.
So interesting. And again, it kind of falls into that Kendre Miller category of like, we're talking sleepers and these guys are late. So players around him likely worth taking a shot at, because I think he probably has the most upside of the similar players around him. But I don't know if the Patriots offense is going to be productive enough to like breed two productive runners.
Yeah.
And I think they still kind of lean on Ramondre a little
it,
bit.
It was
more
weird last year too, because Gibson. Zeke was stealing goal line work from Ramondre. I don't think Gibson mm-hmm. does that, but what Ramondre was always able to kind of hold Zeke off with. I mean, like, remember when Ramondre was out down the stretch, Zeke caught as many passes in the league at that position. So like mm-hmm. the offense is different, right? But I also think, like, mm-hmm. if Gibson gets the third down role, which is weird because that's kind of been Ramondre's thing. So I thought the signing was interesting. They gave him an okay contract.
Yeah. I know it's weird because, like, Gibson's shown he can handle all three downs to an extent. Still struggles at times. But, like, so is Ramondre. And like you said, Ramondre's always been good as a pass catcher and kind of a third down guy. So they kind of, like, added the same player, which is kind of weird. So I don't know which one ends up doing which. Yeah. So I think that's where it's kind of. So ultimately, I guess when we break this down, I would probably have more
Gibson. Like, if you told Stevenson me today that Antonio Gibson was playing third down, majority of third downs and 2 minute drills, I would just wait and draft him because the Patriots are probably going to be bad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if for the cost and what I would invest in a Patriots player, I'm probably right. taking Gibson. I'm going to take the cheaper Patriots player.
Especially if it's
just because
bad
I don't expect the offense to be like super good. So like, I think Gibson and Ross Stevenson are closer than people probably want to admit overall as like a talent level. So I think that the fantasy production's been there for Stevenson because he's been given like a massive workload for the last little bit here. So I'll probably lean towards Gibson as well there.
All right, let's transition over to wide receivers. Jeremy, start us off. Some potential wide receiver sleepers here for the 2024 season.
Wide receivers. We got a plethora yep. here.
I mean, look, right. this is a position where you just draft all the second and third year wide receivers and hope they pan out. So you have what? Quentin Johnston.
I got a couple of those.
Jamison Williams, Rashad Bateman, like, do that. A lot of heartbreak with that. Those three players, but a lot of post-type sleeper potential as well.
Not for two of them. I won't take the first two. Rashad Bateman, interesting. I can't quit him.
I can make a case for Jamison in a little bit, but the problem with that is if you make a case or any sort of argument for Jamison Williams to have this sleeper-type season, that means either the Lions just abandon the run somehow, or one of Amon-Ra, Laporta, Gibbs, or Montgomery really disappointed, or Goff threw for 5,000 yards, which mm-hmm. I don't think any of those things are very likely.
Yeah, I think that's a struggle with Jamison, and that's where I'm just kind of, I'm off it. I wrote an article in Dynasty last week of like third-year players, like it just ain't happening, and I think Jamison's one of them. I just don't see it in this offense. Maybe his role does increase a little bit, but like you said, Amon-Ra is their go-to in the passing game. Laporta's kind of become a field stretcher really for them. Now, Laporta is another regression candidate just because of how high his touchdown percentage mm-hmm. was last year, but I do think that if anybody loses stuff, it likely
so
is Laporta too, if Jameson does kind of get some run here. So I'm not ready to crown Jameson by any means as a sleeper. I do think that there's a ton of upside there if it becomes something. But like you said, the offense would have to change so much systematically that it just doesn't make sense that it's going to happen. For me, at least with Jameson.
I will say, though, he does
have
his first kind of normal offseason, right? Rookie season, he's come off of the ACL tear. Last year, he was going into the season suspended. Josh Reynolds is gone, so you're probably looking at easily a career high in snaps and everything. And, like, I'm not a huge schedule guy, but something I can't overlook is this Lions offense and Jared Goff in particular when they play indoors and at home. Bro, Jameson Williams is, barring health, the Lions play 14 games indoors this year. Like, that is so juicy. But I do think we would need him to see some sort of role change with the average at the target, the routes he's running, or else he's probably going to still be more of like a best ball type of player, which is fine. But yeah, I'm torn because like some reasons I say, okay, this could be a good position to make a case for Jameson Williams. Year three wide receiver, this is when a lot of guys tend to really, really settle in. But it's just tough to make a huge argument for him if Amon-Ra, Laporta, and Gibbs are all healthy and playing, because that's the order of the targets, not to mention Montgomery's going to get, 14, 15 carries per game when the game script allows it to.
Yeah, I can't, but that is an interesting thing. 14
they play, like, it's just, it's insane. Like, impressive. They play, obviously, all of their home games, and they play, like, I don't know, Atlanta, like, they just play in every, Minnesota once, obviously. Like, they just play all of their games except for, like, two of their last three are outdoors, which will be interesting for, like, fantasy playoffs and stuff with Goff and stuff. But, like, yeah, it's insane. They just, they almost exclusively play in domes.
It's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I can't do it.
I get it.
I do. I could see that it's untapped potential. Like, truthfully, if Jameson hits, like, it's going to be huge and massive. But, like, I don't know. I'd rather pivot to this guy that I'm going to talk about here. I guess you could call him a sleeper. At least with what Fantasy Pros has. I'm sure by the time the draft season really gets going, I'm sure Jaxon Smith-Njigba isn't going to really be a value.
Post-type sleeper, though, for sure. Like, it doesn't have to be a value. Like, he's a post-type sleeper because he was, the top receiver in that class, wasn't utilized the way we expected, was third in targets, but I'm sure you'll talk about it. With the new offense, it's probably skies up for him.
Yeah, I just think that the way that this is set up to go for JSN is that, like you said, he still saw 93 targets last year as the third receiver. Ultimately, still managed 600 yards, not overly great, but he had a good end of the season. It was kind of a slow traditional wide receiver start, started out a little bit slow, kind of came on near the end of the season there, but never really got a full run. When it comes to opportunity share, I think this year we see that pivot over from Tyler Lockett to JSN as the secondary receiver, if not the primary receiver. So where I'm coming from is that basically he's going at wide receiver. Where was it?
He's like 44. Yeah.
44. So you're talking in a grouping of Romo Dunze, Ladd McConkey, Cortland Sutton, Keon Coleman, Jameson Williams, Christian Watson, a lot of guys, a lot of question marks in this area. And I feel like JSN is still, there's still a lot to be untapped here from JSN, and he's not going to be asked to be the guy moving forward. So that helps him this year. I think DK kind of will draw more of the major coverages, and you're still going to be able to kind of let JSN benefit from the lesser coverage in air quotes that we like to go by. So I think this offense is a little bit more pass friendly this year, and I think that we see JSN kind of get unlocked a little bit more. I mean, it's hard to argue get more than 93 targets, but I do think he maybe crests 100 this year. I think that he could potentially get closer to, you know, 8 touchdowns and get closer to that 1,000-yard mark, which will definitely allow him to exceed the wide receiver 44 position that he's currently going off the board at, and kind of give you that comfortable wide receiver 3 on your roster that you can plug in every week and know you're going to get likely, you know, 10 points from.
Yeah, I mean, new offensive system. With Shane Waldron in there in the past, it was a lot of 12 personnel. It was a lot of 2 tight end sets with Disley and Fant and whoever. And last year, obviously, you'd expected to see them run more 11 personnel, but it still wasn't like a crazy rate. That's going to change with the new offense here. Who's their offensive coordinator? Grubb from Washington. What did they run in Washington? Those 3 wide receiver sets with McMillan, with Polk, and with Roma Dunze. So I think there's a good chance, and the slot receiver in that offense has been very, very productive and very, very busy. Yeah, like I like JSN here. Like I kind of like him. Like a lot of these rookies are going ahead of him. Ladd, Keon Coleman, Brian Thomas, Worthy. Like I don't know how many of them I like straight up over JSN. And then you have like Worthy's going at wide receiver 35 compared to JSN at 44. Like, I understand the upside. I understand you have to also take into consideration with best ball, with underdog drafts, players will get pushed up due to stacking purposes. But, like, yeah, like, I like that for JSN. I think Lockett last year was the first time we kind of saw him not efficient. And when you suddenly aren't efficient at that elevated age, it's probably a sign that you're on the downswing.
Like, for example, like, it's early, but DeAndre Hopkins is ahead of JSN. Like, I'd rather have JSN than DeAndre Hopkins in 24. You know, like,
would you rather have JSN Hollywood or Addison?
Brown, another player. Probably JSN. Honestly, I love Jordan Addison. Like, I think Jordan Addison long term has potential, but I did the second year scouting report on him, and it's kind of the same situation of, like, yes, he's going to get the benefit of not of playing behind Justin Jefferson, but who's the quarterback? What's the situation like? And Addison, although he did catch a lot of his passes and was kind of more of a primary deep type of target, and if you're going to like Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy, two guys who have good NFL arms but like aren't necessarily stretching the field necessarily as much Kirk Cousins would, really kind of does hurt Addison because he's so pigeonholed in that role. It's kind of what they use him in that offense. And so unless he's scoring some touchdowns and getting a little bit onto that, you know, deep type of production and the consistent production on those deeper targets, which may become more inconsistent with worse quarterback play, there is some concern, I think, there for Addison. I think he's a good asset long term, like dynasty wise. But for 2024, I think there could be some definite roller coaster events there with Addison, where I think JSN might just be a little bit more consistent. So I think I'm going to ride out at JSN a little bit better here this year in 2024.
Let's go to Buffalo. I mean, choose a wideout. I think you can make the case.
Chase Claypool.
Okay. Choose a wideout being drafted in the top like 50 selections.
I just had to put it out there.
It would be great for Josh Allen. Chase Claypool was like something this year.
He was talking him up at a press conference. I'm just saying. All right.
But obviously, Stephon Diggs gone. That's 160 plus targets per season since joining Buffalo that need to be replaced. Add Gabe Davis being gone as well. Whether you want to go with Curtis Samuel or the rookie Keon Coleman or my personal favorite Khalil Shakir, like, they all make sense. Like, obviously, Samuel familiar with Joe Brady, had a career season with Joe Brady. Shakir, you know, he's always kind of shown flashes for this team, but hasn't consistently gotten the playing time because Gabe Davis plays like 90%+ of snaps, and obviously you had Steph there. But, you know, small sample size. Shakir last year, 32% target per out run rate with Diggs off the field. He was third among qualified wide receivers in yards after the catch per reception. We know that's what the Bills in this Joe Brady offense wants to add more of, is more layups for Josh Allen, more yards after the catch. And like, remember, like, Diggs kind of fell off the face of the earth down the stretch last season, was barely doing anything. And like, we saw Shakir in the most important games for the Bills during that end of the season, from week 11 into the playoffs. He averaged about 12 fantasy points per game. He made huge plays down the stretch. I think Shakir is going to be good. I think there's a chance he's second on this team in targets, maybe third, depending on how much volume James Cook gets. But yeah, I mean, honestly, like, if you want to make the case for Shakir, for Samuel, for Keon Coleman, I'm definitely trying to sprinkle in, you know, all three wide receivers into some of my teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's surprising how, I mean, it isn't surprising, I guess, just because we don't really have a hard set one in this situation, and at least in the receiver room. But I agree. I like Khalil Shakir a lot. My worry is that they just don't give him enough run. It just seems like maybe they don't believe in him.
Like, it depends because, like,
but like you said, he was very pivotal down the stretch. And like, there's some, like you said, there were some plays that he made
the Chiefs game,
just jaw dropping, as well as like he does everything this offense has kind of lacked at the receiver position really well for the past few seasons. So I can see him getting run. It's just like, is his role too similar to say, like,
that's Curtis the question Samuel, because you think the Bills and, like, would want to run plenty of 12 with Knox and Kincaid. Of the
familiarity. Mm-hmm. I think we see a lot of 12. I think that Dawson Knox is a sneaky play as well, just because I think that both these tight ends could potentially be very high volume target guys, just because Josh absolutely loves Dawson Knox and has for the past few seasons. And obviously I think Kincaid is their focal point in this passing attack at this point in time. I think that's what we're going to see, is Dalton Kincaid lead this team in targets. So the wide receiver position, although interesting, I do think I may, it's hard to say I want to avoid it, but I'm probably going Keon Coleman. The only reason I'm going to go with Coleman is when I'm shooting here, we're in the same territory. Like, at least Fantasy Pros has Coleman's wide receiver 47, Shakir's 52, Samuel's 51. Like, I'm probably going to shoot with Coleman on the basis of the higher upside, because I think if Keon Coleman hits, you've got like top 12 potential. It sounds wild, but I really do think that that's within the realm, because he does offer some ability after the catch, like you'd mentioned, which they're looking for at that elite bigger size. He's kind of a better, and his jump ball percentage wasn't great, and he's not the best contested catch guy, but he definitely can make some really good circus catches. So I think there's a huge upside in Keon Coleman. So I would probably go that direction, just because I think that this group is going to be fighting for targets as opposed to, like, getting them. I think a lot of those targets end up with Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, James Cook, and then they kind of sprinkle. I wouldn't say sprinkle. I guess they would distribute them evenly almost between this receiver group. So with less targets, I'm going to lean on the guy that's probably got the more explosive stuff and go with.
And I totally agree. Like, if you pass on Shakir or Samuel and they quote unquote hit, you're probably looking at like wide receiver 22, right? As like, whoa, they hit. If Keon Coleman hits and you pass on him, you probably passed on like wide receiver 15 and up, because like if he hits,
top 12 is probably
Like he's not going to get, like, regardless, he's not going to get stats volume. That's just not happening. But he also, with his explosive playability, like, he doesn't need to get 160 targets. But I do think, like, we know Josh Allen's the second best quarterback in the league. Yes, his offense is, I don't want to say run heavy, but more run centric with Brady there. But like, they're still going to let Josh be Josh. And that means one, if not two, of these wide receivers, including Dalton Kincaid, are going along with him. So I definitely want some exposure. Any more wide receivers before we close out with tight ends?
Yeah, I mean, I have my eye. I don't want to get too deep into it, but Michael Wilson.
Interesting, because I feel like most people are just now saying, you know what, they brought in Wilson, they brought in they brought in Marvin Harrison Jr., they brought in even Zay Jones, Dortch is still there, like, McBride obviously emerged, like, it's over for Michael Wilson. But you, you're not quite there yet. You say not so fast.
I just don't think, I think, because everybody's saying that, that there is a value to be had here. I don't think he's a top 24 guy by any means. I don't think the volume will be there. Like you said, McBride's going to eat like he did last year. Marvin Harris is going to eat. Zay Jones will have enough of a role. But I think in what has become a popular format, which typically is kind of, you know, two wide receivers, maybe two flex or three flex, you know, he's within that top 48 potential at wide receiver, which, it doesn't sound fancy, but those guys can help you definitely kind of shore up the back end of your roster. And I think he'll have a couple boom weeks here or there if he stays healthy. He's definitely shown it on tape, where he's a good NFL receiver. I think it's going to be nothing crazy, but I think he's, I mean, he's fairly cheap. Like, let's see here. He's at wide receiver 63, you know, so he's around like Dontavian Wicks, Xavier Leggett, Darnell Mooney. Like, I mean, take your pick at that point. And I'm going to go with the guy that has the potential to be, to evolve into the wide receiver too. Like, maybe he just beats out Zay Jones.
Yeah, he easily could. Like,
yeah, he's proven
when Wilson was healthy last year, but, like, he was productive. It's just, man, you know, he's had, dating back to college, he's had some issues staying on the field. So,
yeah, and so is Zay Jones. So it's kind of like you have pick your poison there. I just think that there is some upside there in Michael Wilson still. Not a ton, not enough to like move the needle either direction on your roster, but it's just kind of a nice piece to have at the back end of it. But the one guy I really, really want to get in on is Jahan Dotson.
This is a post-type sleeper.
We're going to have another post-type sleeper here. I really do like what Jahan Dotson offers. I know it's been two back-to-back seasons of kind of, I mean, his rookie year was exciting because of the 7 touchdowns, but really hasn't crested over 550 yards yet at the receiver position. His yards per reception went down drastically last year. Only caught 59% of his targets, which is actually up from his rookie season, but still not the best number in the world. Could argue that a little bit towards the quarterback play as well. But I think the RPO offense that we're likely to see here a little bit from Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels under center in Washington leans to him a little bit and his ability to be a quick separator, especially in the red zone. Terry McLaurin is going to probably be a little bit of your deeper guy, but Jahan Dotson can spread the field as well. And Jaden Daniels has been able to prove, at least at the collegiate level, to support both Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. So I do think that the second receiver does get some run here. No real good threat there at the tight end position. I know people are in love with Ben Sinop, but that's not going to really be as much as everybody wants it to be. And I really do think that you see Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson kind of get into that area of, you know, potential two top 36 guys just because of what Jaden Daniels can do. And kind of in that PPR format, I think that Washington kind of starts to throw the ball a lot more. And I think that both these guys could easily crest close to, you know, 100 targets in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, we know Cliff's offenses are fast paced. Brian Robinson's been talking about that a lot this offseason about how fast paced and up-tempo the offense is going to be. It's been, you know, it's tried to be at least a vertical passing attack. And Jaden Daniels is so good as a deep ball thrower in college. So I was, you know, this time last season, Jahan Dotson was like one of my favorite players to draft. It didn't work out, but the role isn't changing. The offense is probably expected to be more fantasy friendly, and the defense, especially the secondary, is still so bad that I think Washington's going to have to throw quite a bit. So I like that call. All right, tight ends. Not as many tight ends, obviously, but the position I feel like is, you feel like it's a trap every time you say it, but it does feel a little bit more deep than normal. I'll mention a couple players real briefly. Staying in Seattle, like you mentioned with JSN, I like Noah Fant a little bit just because I think there's finally going to be an uptick in snaps and routes and all that for him because there's going to be way less two tight end sets. And I still think the offense, like you mentioned as well, throws the ball a little bit more than we've seen in the previous Seattle regimes. Juwan Johnson in New Orleans, just because, like, they don't have anybody really. They have Olave and Rashid Shaheed. Johnson was pretty good last year. He can score touchdowns. He can be that red zone threat. Olave has not, you know, as good as he's been, he's not been a red zone threat, touchdown scoring player. They don't really have somebody in that. Maybe it's A.T. Perry if he breaks out, but I don't hate Juwan Johnson. And then I think tight end 14, 15 right now, I've recently moved him up in my rankings, is Pat Freiermuth. Again, like, it's George Pickens and then a bunch of unproven pass catching players. Freiermuth and a tight end friendly offense with Arthur Smith. Yes, I understand people are furious with Arthur Smith, but he has been really good for tight ends. So, like, he wasn't good for Kyle Pitts, but if you combine Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith from last season in Atlanta, that would have been a good fantasy tight end. Former tight ends coach, I think he's going to be, I think Freiermuth will be pretty involved, and apparently, well, take it for what it's worth, but him and Russell Wilson have gotten off to a good start with their rapport in mini camp. So those are the three tight ends that stand out to me. You could also throw in, like you mentioned, Benson as well.
I can't do it with Freiermuth.
Is it because of Freiermuth or Arthur Smith?
I'm not going to fall for it. Okay. No, it's Arthur Smith. I love Freiermuth. I think Freiermuth's a very good tight end. I just...
So if their OC's name was Dave Smith.
If it was Smith Arthur, I'd be fine. No, the issue I have is he's going to use Darnell Washington, and he's going to use Connor Hayward.
Right? Oh, he plays like fullback and tight end.
Connor. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think it's Connor is his first name. He's going to use them some way, shape, or form, and one of them is going to be the Jonnu Smith, Pat Freiermuth, and it's going to be a headache. And I just, although it's fair, like where he's going, if he becomes like if he changes his ways and he uses just him, Freiermuth is going to be a steal. He's going to be, like you said. So it's probably worth the risk. I can't trust Arthur Smith.
I hear you.
I like Noah Fant. I could hope for that. I really wish that Noah Fant had been given a role where he gets the non-Arthur Smith treatment and gets, you know, a workload, because I think he could be a really good fantasy tight end.
Like he would at times last year, regardless of who was healthy, it would be Fant and then one of Disley and Parkinson. Whoever the second player was, they would pretty much split routes right down the middle. And on top of already being in the offense that has three wide receivers ahead of you, like there was no chance for him. I think there's still a small chance he's like a top 10 player, but a little bit more of a chance now with what I expect to be more, you know, 11 personnel with just one tight end on the field.
Yeah, I could get behind that. So I got a couple names. Again, you're talking, like you said, I know it seems like a trap, but it really is a deep tight end room this year. Like the top 12 feels so safe that like it almost feels like there's no need for a sleeper tight end, because it's like Laporta.
It's also a position you only start one player, so it's you won't have to draft these guys we talk about.
Kittle, really. Ingram, Njoku, Ferguson, Hockenson, Bowers, Goddard.
He's not a sleeper, but like 13. If I miss out on the elite guys and then like Kincaid, and then like if Andrews falls, if I miss out on those guys, I'm just gonna try to take Jake Ferguson in every draft because I don't get why he's so low.
It's just wild. Like there's literally, it does. It, like you said, I know it feels like a trap, but like it, there's literally like Freiermuth at tight end 16 seems wild, but like also doesn't, because you like that's the list right,
like,
of the top.
Like you can't really put him ahead
and
of the
then
guys.
You add in Schultz, Komet, like. There's so many decent tight ends at this point in time, at least it seems like surface level headed into 2024. But like you said, we're talking sleepers. So a guy I like, I think, is Hunter Henry. I think Hunter Henry has a potential to be a little bit of a sleeper. I know everybody's in on Jalen Polk and Javon Baker, but they're still looking for somebody to be the primary pass catcher in that offense. Could it be Polk? Yes. Could it end up being Baker? Potentially. Yes, they have Kendrick Bourne still there. Take Quan Thornton. Take your pick. Juju Smith-Schuster. There's a bunch of should-have-beens and could-bes, but Hunter Henry's proven to be a safety valve in that offense in the past. He's proven it in LA as well. So I like Henry. I think that there's potential that he's not going to be anything fancy, but he might sneak into that bottom half of the top 12, give us some really good touchdown weeks there. Outside of that, I really like Daniel Bellinger as well. I know everybody's in on Theo Johnson now that Darren Waller has finally officially said he was retired. I thought there was a report that he was going to be retiring at the draft, so I've been like scooping up Daniel Bellinger's wherever I can. But now he's actually said he is, which I guess was real now. So Daniel Bellinger, I think, is the guy that's probably going to be the benefit there. And I think obviously it's another place that there's not a lot behind Malik Nabers at this point in time. There are players there, but none of them have separated from themselves over the past few seasons. It's kind of been the same receiver group and no one separated themselves. So I do like Daniel Bellinger as well as kind of a sneaky, really, really late type of player. Redraft, you may not draft him, but last pick somewhere in there, he might be going. Last few rounds, definitely worth a shot of potential to kind of reach the top. Fringe the top 12, and then probably Craig Dolchich.
Forgot about
another
him.
Place that there's uncertainty. Yeah, there's uncertainty. I mean, he's been injured. That's why he has to get on the field first. But
look, there was a time that I was very, very high
on the field.
A sleeper tight end in a Sean Payton offense by the name of Kobe Fleener, and it didn't really work. But the thought process was the position is also pretty again. Not counting Jimmy Graham, because none of the tight ends after have been close to Jimmy Graham, but I mean, they have Sutton and then a bunch of question marks at wide receiver. Is it Troy Franklin? What can we expect in the second year with a full – right. Will Marvin Mims get Reynolds more of a role? Like, so, like, those are the types of shots you want to take at tight end. And mainly, like, if I'm looking at a tight end that's an ultimate kind of dart throw sleeper candidate, I'm looking for somebody that can run routes. And I don't think there's a chance that – as long as Dulcich plays in the field, is on the field playing, I don't see how he's not running a good amount of routes for this team.
Yeah, it feels like kind of that big slot more type of player for this offense. Like you said, Jimmy Graham was in a Sean Payton offense. You know, we've seen Jeremy Shockey in that offense have some success as well. So I think that overall, I think there's a potential, like you said, when you're really looking for a sleeper tight end, at least my process goes, who has a elite receiving option and then nobody else behind them? Because that's kind of where that tight end can emerge as a good target. Because ultimately, with tight ends, it's volume. You know, your 3 for 30 guys are all over the place that then score a touchdown, you're good to go. But if you could find that guy that all of a sudden, you know, gets 8-10 targets a game, that's the guy that's probably going to be a successful asset for you. So that's where I'm going to shoot with those. Those three, at least, are kind of on my radar, as well as some of the ones.
A lot is going to change here coming up as we approach training camp, preseason. I'm excited. Like, I've been, I don't know if you do this, but right around this time of the year, I always go back and rewatch a ton of the old seasons of Hard Knocks just because, like, gets me in the mood. You know, it's fun. So I love this time of year. I'm excited for training camp to start. Then we get, you know, you think we're getting all these amazing, quote unquote, amazing videos of work, short workouts and catching passes against air. Just wait till training camp starts when we get to see some sort of defense, and then the ADP starts to spike. But Jeremy, what's going on with you in terms of content? Like I mentioned, I know you're doing a ton of dynasty stuff. You're doing redraft stuff as well. Again, it's kind of an interesting time period for dynasty because we're past the NFL draft. There's a couple players that could get signed in free agency that could slightly impact things. But for the most part, I mean, like in one of my leagues, I just made a trade, but it's probably been one of the more quiet parts of the year because, like, leading up to the NFL draft, everybody's trying to trade for rookie picks. Everybody gets rookie fever, but not as much going on, I feel like, right now.
Yeah, I feel like that time kind of dies down a little bit. But yeah, over at the website, we're still turning out some Dynasty content. Like I mentioned a couple times here in this episode, doing a late round quarterback article that's going to have Dynasty and redraft kind of a few players to target there later in your draft. So that's going to be an interesting one. Also had last week was some third year players who have potential to break out this year, as well as some third year players to fade. And we've got, you know, second year scouting reports coming out. The Dynasty team preview series at the podcast is, you know, running through. We've got those coming out almost every single day here for the next few weeks still. And then we'll be turning obviously a little bit into more of some of those players to buy, stuff like that. So just churning out that stuff and, you know, hanging out on Twitter and in the Discord chat. So
be sure to check out all the content. And of course, go to ftnfantasy.com/pricing to take advantage of the early bird special. Again, that ends July 6th. So be sure to jump on that. And we'll be back. Another episode of the For the Numbers podcast will be up on Friday. So two this week, maybe some best ball, maybe some sort of other content. But again, let's get to that point of year where we're going to be doing multiple episodes a week, talking all things redraft, dynasty, everything related to fantasy football. So follow Jeremy on Twitter at PopesFFH. Follow me on Twitter at AFIFER24. For Jeremy, I'm Adam. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for listening as always. See you guys next time. Goodbye.